The head of the local police union comes out against two city council members. Meanwhile, local residents with loved ones in Puerto Rico wait and worry. Good morning and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we're always live at 9. Also, make sure to get our podcast through iTunes or the WJCT app. Just ahead, we speak with FOP President Steve Zona, also local Jacksonville residents on their fears as they don't get word from their loved ones in Puerto Rico. You can get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, a look at Banned Books Week in America happening right now. We'll tell you what the local library system is doing to market. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, we've got an update on the dire situation in Puerto Rico. Millions there are without power, food, safe drinking water after Hurricane Maria devastated the U.S. territory. At one point, 100% of the island was without power. It's going to take many, many months for electricity there to be restored. President Trump, meanwhile, is coming under fire. Critics say he hasn't focused enough attention on the plight of Puerto Rico and the nearby U.S. Virgin Islands over the weekend. Instead, he chose to tweet over a dozen times about the NFL. The crisis, to be fair, was also largely absent from the 24-hour cable news networks, where Hurricanes Harvey in Texas and Irma in Florida got wall-to-wall coverage. Now, Puerto Rico is poorer than all 50 states, but it is a part of this country. It also has an unemployment rate of nearly 12%, and the island's reeling from a big financial crisis, which forced leaders there to declare a form of bankruptcy earlier this year. You may not know that Florida, along with New York, has the highest percentage of Puerto Rican residents here on the mainland. And many people here in Jacksonville have loved ones in Puerto Rico right now who they can't reach. We're going to speak with a couple of them right now as we welcome here in studio our own WJCT employee and friend, Carlos Semide, our colleague. He has family there. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And joining us by phone, Jacksonville resident Alicia Sosa. Her husband, Tito Sosa, is in Puerto Rico, and she has been unable to reach him. Alicia, thanks for getting on the phone with us.
My pleasure.
And we want your calls about the crisis in Puerto Rico. Give us a call at 549-2937. Emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on Facebook, too. Alicia, let's begin with you. Your husband, Tito Sosa, was he in Puerto Rico during the storm? Why is he there, and what's the situation now with him?
Sure, yeah. So he, like many people with family in Puerto Rico, has senior or elderly family members there, and so one of which is his grandfather is on hospice. And with Irma, he was without care for several days, and it was just a challenging situation. As this Hurricane Maria escalated, we realized we really needed somebody there, and Tito, with his medical background and just a little bit more strength to be able to move people and things, and his military background, it was the best and really only one in the family that could fly out last minute and get there. So he jumped on a flight with 24-hour notice and was in Puerto Rico Monday night just before the storm hit to be able to board up some windows and move his senior family members to a neighbor's house that was a little bit more secure.
And you haven't heard from him since?
Haven't heard a word.
Mm-hmm. And there's no way to contact him? No, there's no power there? He can't get a cell phone call out, right?
Right, yeah. We knew that it would be a while, you know, a few days before we'd probably be able to connect with him after the storm. Quite frankly, I didn't know it would be this long. He's on the west side of the island, in an area called Añasco, and it's pretty rural. It's not, you know, the capital. It's, their houses are far and few between a little bit in some stretches, at least where they're at. And there are cell towers up in, from what I've heard, in some nearby areas, but not in their town, and obviously not enough to where we can contact them because we haven't been able to reach them. Power's down, which also means water's down, and it appears that the two roads that you can use to get to their house are impassable. One washed away and the other is covered with debris, is what we've collected and gathered so far.
It's 549-2937 to join us. Our own colleague Carlos Semide, longtime employee of WJCT. You grew up in New York, but your parents grew up in Puerto Rico. They've passed away. You still, though, have relatives on the island that you haven't been able to reach. Is that right?
Yes, that's very true. I'm from New York City, but like many Puerto Ricans from El Barrio, Puerto Rico grows up in you. And first of all, Alicia, lo siento. I'm really sorry for what's going on, but I hope that you soon get news, and that is good news. Yes, it's kind of troubling. Even friends from high school and college that moved to the island, you know, we're still waiting. I'm also waiting for friends from the western part of the island in Cabo Rojo, and that's near Rincon, which is, if you're a surfer, you definitely know where that is. And little by little, you know, there are things coming through, but it's just not fast enough. It's like you're the last kid waiting to be picked up at the nursery. But I have to say that the listeners are just like when Harvey came through and with Irma, they're really getting together and sharing what they do know. It's like I'm an old submariner from Kings Bay, and it's like when we had a phone tree, and if you knew something, you said something and shared it so that at least it consoles the next person.
Sure. Alicia, what about Carlos's point that Puerto Rico always seems to be an afterthought? And we're certainly seeing this now as the humanitarian crisis there is dire. Senator Marco Rubio has stepped out on this issue. He's trying to get more aid to the island. But it's certainly something that, as we've watched the pictures coming in from the island, increasingly alarming. Hospitals without power, children and senior citizens in grave danger. They're looking at many months without electricity. It's a bad situation.
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, the struggle is, I think, for a lot of Puerto Ricans that have been through storms or just everyday life, it's not uncommon for the electric to go out for a couple of days. I mean, quite frankly, at least in the part of the island where my husband's family is. And so I think that there is a little bit of normality in that, but obviously this is an extreme that no one, you know, would have expected or could have predicted, and I think that might be catching some people off guard. That, you know, they may be used to, okay, once in a while the power goes out for a couple of days. We're prepared for that. They have water cisterns and all those things, but to have lost power for days, weeks at a time, you know, likely months for many, that's quite devastating. And for a lot of people there, a lot of the people that are on the island are senior, like, you know, parents and grandparents of a family here, and a lot of them need medical care or attention and are physically, you know, not as equipped as, you know, someone maybe a little bit younger in years to be able to pick up and clean up and move forward. And so there are a lot of challenges in those things, and I do think we need more attention on it, and I'm glad that you brought that up. I think the cable station should be, you know, focus on this. It's a big deal impacting not just the people in Puerto Rico, but, you know, across the country.
Carlos, people might not stop and think about the fact that these are 3 million U.S. citizens
yes.
that are in danger right now.
Absolutely. And they bring quite a bit to not just their culture, but to our cultures as well. Even if your connection with Puerto Rico is just through sports, you know, and entertainment, there's just so much that we do benefit from and enjoy. And this is a time to reach out to them and say, you know, we are still all connected. Just like our own listeners here in Jacksonville, when anybody would call up and say, this is what I know when Hurricane Irma and Matthew came through here. And so that's the kind of spirit we're looking for right now with Puerto Rico and anybody that's connected with it. Whether you're in Orlando, Jacksonville. This morning, when we were taking calls for our pledge drive, I had a wonderful call from a man who is from Colombia, and he had just recently visited. And he even felt the solidarity and said, you know, I love Puerto Rico, and if I could right now, I'd just go there and drive and just help out however I can. But until then, you know, let me make a pledge of support so that we can mm-hmm. all stay connected. And that's the kind of spirit we're seeing.
And what are your efforts going to entail to get in touch with your relatives?
Well, so far, you know, whatever I found out, I've been able to post on Facebook. Like a colleague of mine, Amy, this morning said, hey, do you know about the safe list, the Vieques safe list? And I said, no, I didn't. So sure enough, I did find it on Facebook, and I posted it so someone else could then share it and then, you know, get that wonderful, you know, synergy where people just keep multiplying. And so thanks, Amy. And, you know, people already started to check it, and it gets updated regularly. And you can see the names of folks who in that little off the mainland island Vieques, you know, whether they're safe or not. That's even more isolated. So it's important to, if you get that kind of information, to share it. And so that's what I did. And also, there's a YouCaring website where different sports figures have started FundMe pages so that you can go ahead and make a donation to go straight to the help that's needed out there. So that's also something I've shared.
Sure. And even if people are safe and they survive the storm, they're looking at long-term threats. They don't have drinking water. They don't have a reliable food supply. They don't have power.
And airports don't have the radar that they need for their towers to, you know, bring in the plane safely.
Yes. And so getting aid to the island has been challenging.
It is. This is definitely be, you know, the area and the time when whatever we figure out on how to recover quickly will be the blueprint from now on. Because this is, you know, this can happen anywhere. It could, you know, it's happened with us, with Harvey and Katrina. And so we definitely have to get ready. And this will be a way to get stronger and quicker and also the aid where it needs to get. But yes, like even radar, which is what the air traffic controllers need, is down.
We're going to continue to follow it. So many local folks watching and worrying like you. But thank you for getting on the show with us to share your story.
Yes, I've got my fingers crossed and my heart full of hope.
He's our own colleague, Carlos Semide, Jacksonville resident Alicia Sosa, also joining us. Other news to talk about now, FOP President Steve Zona is in the headlines this week, the local FOP president. He's asked two city council members to resign over altercations they've had with police. Zona also caught attention this week when he tweeted that he thinks police should stop escorting NFL players to games. This in the wake of many players over the weekend taking a knee during the national anthem to protest the police killings of black men. We decided to ask Steve his thoughts about all this, and he is on the line. Steve Zona, president of the local FOP, thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Melissa, and thank you for having me.
So two different things going on here. Let's begin with the first issue. You, on Sunday, called for two Jacksonville City Council members to make a public apology to police or resign. This is after our partner News for Jax put online a JSO body camera video showing the moment that officers pulled over City Councilman Reggie Gaffney on suspicion of having a stolen license plate. Gaffney and Councilwoman Katrina Brown are alleging the traffic stop was racial profiling. From your perspective, why are you calling for them to apologize or resign?
Well, I've watched the entire video, and it was a legitimate traffic stop. The police officer ran the tag that was attached to Councilman Gaffney's vehicle, and it came back stolen. The sheriff puts computers in our cars. The sheriff grants us access to NCIC, FCIC, to run tags, to run people, to take criminals off the street. There was nothing racially motivated about that. That's what police officers do. And as soon as the traffic stops started, Councilman Gaffney wanted to make sure the police officer knew who he was. And then from that point forward, he was combative with the police officer. He threatened the police officer with the sheriff. He threatened them with a chief. He actually picked up the phone, called a chief, put a chief on the phone, and handed that phone to one of the police officers in an attempt to intimidate him. He wouldn't cooperate with the entire investigation. Then on top of that, during the middle of the investigation, Katrina Brown, who had no business at that traffic stop, pulled up and interjected herself into that situation. And at one point, she yelled out the window to the police officers that she saw it. She saw everything. It was racial profiling. She doesn't even know why at that point, why the traffic stop occurred, unless she wants to admit that her and Councilman Gaffney talked on the phone and arranged for her to show up. But those things, it's a disgusting situation. They're disgusting, embarrassing comments and actions by those two council members, trying to pin a stigma on those police officers that they don't deserve when they're just doing their job. It's beneath the position they hold as council members. It's embarrassing to the entire body of the city council, and they owe those police officers an apology. Councilman Reggie Gaffney tries to say that he felt intimidated And now he knows what it's like for the average African American on the north side to be stopped by a police officer. I think the average viewer that will see that video will realize that if Councilman Gaffney and Councilman Katrina Brown that were trying to do the intimidating based on the positions they hold, and because of that, they owe those officers, they owe every officer here in the city of Jacksonville an apology. They owe the community an apology. They're elected officials here. And if they're not willing to do that, they're not fit to serve. They need to resign.
It's 549-2937 to connect with FOP President Steve Zona. And just so that we disclose this to all our listeners, we have our reporters have reached out to the two folks on the city council involved in the story and have not heard back yet. But we are trying to get their point of view on this. So you've come out and made these comments about these two city council reps at the same time over the weekend when the whole NFL issue was lighting up social media and we saw Jaguars players linking arms or taking a knee before playing the Ravens in London. You tweeted that you thought that police should stop escorting NFL players to and from games. That caught our attention, too. Why did you tweet that?
Sure. I mean, obviously, look, total transparency, total honesty. This whole situation with the NFL, did that spur my comment? Absolutely. But let's look at the bigger picture. But if you have a concert here in town, you know, at Metro Park or Daly Stadium, or you have something going on at the arena, whoever the producer is has to pay for the police officers. Inside and outside the facility, the traffic control, everything else. The Jacksonville Jaguars don't pay a penny. Let's go a little bit bigger. They don't pay a penny for any of the traffic control. All those, the 75, 80, 100 police officers that you see out there directing traffic, that's in the sheriff's budget. They're not reimbursed by the Jacksonville Jaguars. The inside security, they're not reimbursed by the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Let me just jump in, Steve. Is this something that's done in every NFL city? I assume it is.
Well, the escorts are done in every NFL city.
And so when you let me just jump in again because I'm a little confused. Do you escort players from the airport to the hotel and then from the hotel to the stadium? Is that how it works?
Sure. So when out of county teams come, the police officers go pick them up and escort them from the airport to the hotel, and then the hotel, which sometimes is 20 miles away from the hotel to the game. They escort them. They run blue lights and sirens. They close lanes. They open lanes. They block lanes. They run red lights just to get the football team there in time for the game. And everybody else has to leave 2 or 3 hours early so they can make it there in time. I just think it's time we stop that practice.
And you see it as a matter of safety and security. You think the escorts can sometimes be dangerous. What would you say? I saw some critics of your position on Twitter over the weekend saying, when you take the oath to protect and serve, you have to defend and protect people that you might not agree with or you might not like. What about that argument?
Sure. They are 100% correct, and I have not called, will not call, for a boycott of working any of the games. That's our job. That's the oath we took to work those games. And I encourage all my members to show up and work them just like they have any other day. The escorts is a totally different thing. That's not a protect and serve. And like I told the critics on Twitter this weekend, what is the purpose? Why is it necessary to run blue lights and sirens for 20 miles, escorting a bunch of football players to a game? Every other fan in the city gets there okay. Why can't they leave in time to get to a football game, however early it's necessary for them to prepare? That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying don't work the game.
Let's take a few calls for you just because there's a lot of folks waiting on hold. Gail is in Arlington. Sure. Hey, Gail, you're on the air. Go ahead, Gail.
I'm wondering what inspired this man to, or this officer to, run the plate. I mean, I'm a wife.
She got cut off. But her question was, why were the police running the plate on Councilman Gaffney to begin with?
Sure. Like I said earlier, and maybe she missed that, and if I didn't explain it well enough, I apologize. But That's why we have the computers in our cars. Inside those computers, we have access to NCIC, FCIC. Those tags are an FCIC. So that's how we find stolen cars. That's how we find wanted people. That's how we find runaways. You name it. There's a variable things that are in that database that if we run your tag, we're able to determine about you or potentially that vehicle. So routinely, as we're riding around, in between calls and when time permits, we proactively run tags on vehicles. It's just, it's simple. It's done all over the city.
And the police deny that they racially profiled Councilman Gaffney, that they singled him out in any way. Is that the union's position?
Oh, absolutely. There was nothing racially motivated about that traffic stop or running his tag. Just because the driver of a vehicle is an African-American male, if we believe in that allegation, that would mean that every police officer in Jacksonville can no longer run tags if the driver is an African-American male. That's ridiculous.
And the background that we did get into on this is a year and a half ago, Councilman Gaffney did file a police report. He had his car repaired at an auto repair shop, and after he got the car back, he discovered his license plate had been removed from his vehicle. He reported that, and so apparently that was the background of that. But let's take a few more calls. Don in Arlington. Don in East Arlington. Hi, Don. Go ahead.
Hi, Melissa. My question was the same as the prior caller, and I have a problem with saying that there was no particular reason, that this was totally random. There has to be a reason that an officer would choose a particular car to run that plate.
Okay. What about that, Steve Zona? The perception that some hold anyway, that that police are more likely to pull over a man driving a car for some reason or other if that man is black.
I think that's a false. I mean, look, that's people's perceptions, and I get that. Everybody has their own perception of what's going on, but I could tell you that's false. I could probably tell you that as a police officer every day, I ran 20, 30, 40 tags, and maybe during a given day, I stopped none of those people because the tag came back to the assigned car. It came back to the same color car. Really, the tag doesn't tell you much about the occupant other than the name and the date of birth. You have to run it through another database to see if that person's wanted unless it's linked up. So there is no reason that police officers proactively look for stolen vehicles. Police officers proactively look for wanted people. That's the reason. The perception that there's an ulterior motive, I get people have that perception, but it's false.
Lori on the west side. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi there. I know that in Jacksonville, we have had DOT issues with license plates before. In our databases, and this was several decades ago, where people were taking tags, blah, 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 and putting them on, they would even take similar tags from similar cars. What is the error rate in our databases today? Because GIGO is GIGO, and if we're not measuring that and we're not testing it, we're all looking a lot stupider, and we're all putting ourselves at risk because you have to question a computer, period.
Okay. Steve Zona?
Well, I guess he's referring to garbage in and garbage out as it relates to data and stuff inside computers. Well, I wouldn't call this garbage in because Councilman Reginald Gaffney actually physically walked into a police substation here in town and reported his tag, his own tag stolen. That tag on the report that was made matched the tag that was on his vehicle. So it's not garbage in, garbage out in this incident. It was legitimate. He reported it, and it all matched up when he was stopped. So as far as the error rate in the computer system, those systems are maintained by the state. The information is input into the system by humans. So I imagine there is a certain error rate in that process, but in this particular case, there's not.
And, you know, I realize that it's your job to support your membership to support the local ranks of the JSO. You're calling for two elected officials to resign because they have taken issue with the way that one of them was treated by police. Let me just ask you, as someone who's not on either side of this, is this the best way to resolve these strained relations that we see between African-American residents of the city, including, it seems now, elected office holders, and the police? Is this the best way forward?
Well, let me say this. They're taking issue, they're claiming they're taking issue with the way they were treated. I've seen the video. Those police officers did nothing wrong, in my opinion. Now, the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office will do their own investigation to determine, if there's any policies and procedures violated. I'll turn that question around. Is the behavior of two sitting city council members, one of them or both of them trying to intimidate those police officers, one of them trying to make a racial issue out of something that's not, in the middle of an atmosphere here in town where there are strained relations between police and the African-American community, I'll turn that question around. Is that the best way for so-called leaders in our city to handle a situation like this? Shouldn't we expect more of them? And you're right, it is my job to defend the police officers here in town, especially when they're right, and that's what I'm going to do. And I think that's a question for them. I know you've tried to reach out to them. Their behavior, their actions caused this, not mine, not the police officers. They're the ones that should be held accountable.
And it's been reported as well that Councilwoman Brown has called for greater police accountability as the council looks at hiring dozens of new police officers. At the same time, you have asked the Sheriff's Office Integrity Unit to investigate whether Councilman Gaffney falsely reported his license plate stolen. And so we'll continue to follow this story. But Steve Zona, you are president of the local FOP, and we do appreciate you being on the line with us. Thank you for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
And we will continue our efforts to speak with Councilman Gaffney. Much more still ahead. Up next, a look at Banned Books Week. But first, here's how you can show your financial support for WJCT. That's in just a moment here. We need you to do it right now by calling 353-9528.
And once again, make that phone call right now. Show your support for all the programs you enjoy here at WJCT. Hi, I'm Kevin Mershar, producer for First Coast Connect. And we are here during our fall fund drive asking for your support. We're trying to get 4,500 new donors this year, and we have 1,295 to go. So if we can get you, if you've never shown your financial support for this program, to make that call now, that would be fantastic. Call now, 353-9528. And don't forget, we are giving away an Amazon Echo every day during this drive. So you give us a call, you become a member, you become a supporter, maybe you become a sustainer at $10 a month. We'll have the numbers for you. We're going to give one away every single day during this drive. We gave one yesterday. Yesterday's Teresa. Congratulations to her. She is the winner of the day two of this drive. Now it's day three. What can you do? Make a call. Show your support. 353-9528. If you listen to all the great programming here at WJCT, you listen to what you see on TV, maybe even watching the Vietnam War, the great documentary that's been airing on PBS this week. Well, all that stuff's made possible because of listeners like you showing your financial support for this program. So call us now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. You can go online at wjct.org. Not only are we giving away an Echo every day, we're going to give an Echo Show. That's got a little screen on it and everything. We're giving one of those away at the end of the drive. Everyone who calls in with their support, doesn't matter how much you call in your support with, you're going to be in for that drive. So give us a call now, 353-9528, 1-800-722-9528. And thank you very much for supporting this, your public radio station.
Comcast Business, committed to providing dependable internet service for businesses that depend on it. Comcast Business, internet, voice, and TV, built for business.
Hey there, I'm Joshua Johnson, the host of 1A. I grew up in West Palm Beach, just down I-95 from Jacksonville, and it always amazed me how many different kinds of people that highway connects. Now I get to connect with people from all walks of life here on WJCT, debating tough topics with courage, clarity, and compassion. Join us for 1A, weekday mornings at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
WJCT's Jaguar Season Parking is still available. Be part of the coolest tailgating downtown. Includes paved space, indoor bathroom access. Contact Holly Manuel at 358-6311 or log on to wjct.org/parking. Reserve your space today.
Welcome back. Well, this week marks Banned Books Week in America. The annual event runs through September 30th, and it's set up to point out the perils of censorship and the importance of the freedom to read. Among the groups sponsoring Banned Books Week is the American Library Association. Every year, they release an annual list of the 10 most challenged books, works that have been targeted for removal from a library or school curriculum. Here with more, Kelly Likens, Region Manager and Librarian with the Jacksonville Public Library. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also with us, our own book club leader, one of the most popular book club leaders you will ever meet, Stacy Goldring.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, and so good to have you both here. Kelly, let's begin with you. The Jacksonville Public Library has a number of events planned to mark Banned Books Week.
That's correct. We are celebrating the freedom to read this week, and you can participate by coming out to one of our mini programs that we have for banned books. Specifically, it's going to be a really great program Wednesday evening at the Pablo Creek Library. We're having Leslie Kirkwood from the group Banned speak about your freedom to read. It's going to be a really good program.
This is highlighted every year, Stacy Goldring, to drive home how important it is to guard against censorship in this country.
Absolutely. It all comes down to the First Amendment, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, etc. So our libraries are one of the most important gems that our city has. And I am hoping that there'll be great attendance at these events, such as the important event on Wednesday, because with knowledge comes education and power, and then we don't fear the other. So by reading banned books, you actually understand you can try to understand why people are so fearful of something like Huckleberry Finn or The Great Gatsby.
Always challenged books, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. Harry Potter.
People go to the library or books, mainly libraries, and they say, I don't want my kids reading this. I want you to take this book off the shelves. That's how you challenge a book, right?
Exactly. And yeah, the library system does have a form that the person can fill out to explain why they think the book should be reviewed. And then it goes to a committee where we look at their opinion and then come to a decision, which is, of course, usually always to retain the book.
Yeah. Books are almost never truly banned in this country, but they're frequently challenged.
Oh, they're banned. But
there have been actual bans?
Oh, yeah, they're banned. And by banned, meaning that it's taken off a library shelf. It can be challenged and then perhaps maybe moved if perhaps the book should maybe be an adult section instead of the YA, etc. But books have been banned, and that is incredibly frightening, and people should stand up and make sure that their rights to read and their rights to write are respected. That's what America is all about.
And you have in front of you the mm-hmm. list of the top 10 most challenged books in
there
America.
Are several top 10 lists. Okay. And this year, and I was talking with Kelly about this, it's very interesting. There seem to be trends mm-hmm. in what people fear and therefore want banned, because if we shut our eyes and we don't see it, it's not happening. But unfortunately or fortunately, people are always going to have sex and there's always going to be bad language. So the question is, do you run from it or do you try to understand mm-hmm. it and broaden broaden your world. And we were looking over the top 10 most challenged books this year. And it seems that, what was the book with the penguins that everyone was upset about?
And Tango Makes Three. That has been a very commonly challenged book. It's a picture book. So they are frequently children's or teen books. So the parents don't want their children reading those books. But, you know, if you don't want your child to read those books, that's fine. But it still has to be made available for other people who may not mind it if their children read those books.
That is such a great point. It is up to the parents. But your parents cannot decide what my parents feel I should read. It is
exactly.
our beautiful individual choice to choose. Now, the Tango book got knocked out of the top 10 for this year, but there are several other to take its place. And the top one was called This One's Summer, and it was challenged because it includes LGBT characters, drug abuse, profanity, and considered thusly sexually explicit with mature themes.
It's a young adult book?
Yeah, it is a young adult book. So for me, I would jump on this because I would want to learn more. I would not want to be afraid of this. I would want to understand it. So I would run to this book. So I'm saying, great stocking stuffer. This One Summer, written by Mariko Tamaki and illustrated by Jillian Tamaki. So a lot of the books, it seems, this year have to do with LGBT characters or transgender children. So that tells me this is something we need to learn more about and embrace, not run away.
Well, that's part of the irony of banning books is usually when one gets banned,
everyone wants to go read it.
It's like whack-a-mole. It's the best game.
If you don't want it, it's the hottest item in town.
Yeah, just tell me, don't touch it. Don't touch it. And I gotta have it.
That's
human nature.
And then
everyone wants to read it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, it's a first this year I noticed that a book was listed not due to what is the content inside, but because of the author.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cosby
yep.
wrote
mm-hmm.
a series of kids' books called Little Bill, and those are being challenged too.
You know, that is so tricky when you think about the author, because there was a book several years ago called Sweet Française, and the woman who wrote it was a Nazi, and she was Jewish, and she was killed in Auschwitz. And it was a great book. I thought it was an incredibly interesting book, but the discussion at the book groups revolved around the fact how do you separate the author, very complicated author, from the book itself? So you have to make a decision. Are you going to enjoy it for what it purely is, or are you going to dig in and make some type of judgment based on who the author is? It's very tricky.
What are some of the most difficult situations you've seen at the library, Kelly, when you deal with challenges to books?
Usually people who find absolutely no value in the book. So even though it may actually be a really good book, if it has a lot of bad words, they think the book has no value, even though it may be a really good story. So these are some of the things that we see when we read through the forms that they fill out saying they want to have the book looked at for possible removal. And also just explaining to, usually if it's a parent and they want the teen or the children book, you know, removed, just they don't seem to understand that, you know, you can keep your own kids from reading that book, but we have to let everyone else decide for themselves if they want to read it.
Have you ever removed a book? What challenges recently have been successful?
I can remember a couple over, let's say, the last decade. One was actually an illegal book. It was about how to make a homemade machine gun, which is apparently illegal. So it was removed. We had moved one book from the children's section to the teen section because it was miscataloged. It was about teen pregnancy, but it was mostly full of brightly colored pictures, which was why it was miscataloged into the children's department. So we did move it to the teen collection. Mm. A couple of things like that. One book we removed because turns out it was a big ad selling someone's business, which does not fit into our collection development policy. So that one was removed, okay. But just because it was a sell.
The book Fahrenheit 451 is a novel that talks about the consequences of banning books. And mm-hmm. every year during Banned Books Week, people reference Fahrenheit 451 as sort of a cautionary tale of what of a worst-case scenario,
art
of what you might see.
Life imitating art.
Right. If we started the wholesale banning of books, what could result from that?
Right. And I was talking to the owner of the San Marco bookstore, and she was saying she cannot keep 1984 on her shelves, which is a story that is about a dystopian world where 2 + 2 = 5.
That's right. And so let's make one final mention of a big event at the library tomorrow, marking Banned Books Week.
It's at the Pablo Creek Regional Library tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock. Leslie Kirkwood from the group Banned will be speaking on the importance of intellectual freedom.
And if you want to join the First Coast Connect Book Club, you can do that by listening, and you can also come to Stacy's Book Club. Can we share with listeners
ahead.
That too?
Sure. Just go ahead and contact me at books@chapterendnotes.com or go ahead and call the San Marco Bookstore, and we will sign you up. And we look forward to discussing literature, banned and otherwise. And if you want to become active in supporting our libraries, I suggest you call the city and you tell them to extend the hours and hire a bunch of more librarians, because that
yes.
is much more important
Please do it.
Than anything else. And we will read books about football. How about that? We will read books about the history of the Jaguar. We will do all these. And, it, you know, I think that it is just so important that we open the libraries to everyone. In my world, they're open 24/7.
When I was a kid, my dad had a book hidden away in his bedroom called Semi-Tough. It was about football, and I remember reading it. It was a little too mature for me when I read it. but I remember that book about football. Just, it's a random memory.
Okay. I remember the Thornbirds. That was hot.
Okay, so Kelly Likens, regional manager and librarian with the Jacksonville Public Library. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
The library is a sponsor of the First Coast Connect Book Club, and our own book club leader, Stacy Goldring, always wants your emails. You can email her at bookclub@wjct.org. Ladies, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ray from Car Talk. You know, for the last 30 years, you've had to put up with this. And we know it's been a struggle. Well, it's time for Car Talk to make room on this station for something new and hopefully a little more professional. You can still listen to us online, but here on the station, we hope you enjoy the next generation of great programs. And thanks.
Join us for the final episode of Car Talk, September 30th on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT and Special Forces Association Chapter 88 for an evening watching, listening to, and discussing the many stories of service from the Vietnam War. The Vietnam War and Stories of Service is October 3rd at 7 p.m. at WJCT Studios. For more information and to RSVP for this free event, visit wjct.org/storiesofservice.
On the next Jazz Night in America, we're at the San Jose Jazz Summer Fest with rising Cuban star vocalist Daime Arocena.
I mean, I'm not Beyonce. I'm just a Cuban jazz singer that tried to mix Cuban roots with jazz.
And Dominican French vocalist Cyril Aimé. We're starting something on the next Jazz Night in America. I'm Christian McBride.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, a national conference is coming to Jacksonville this week focused on the field of mindfulness. Now, this comes from the Society of Emotional Intelligence. They're going to present the impact of mindfulness and emotional intelligence on the healthcare industry and your personal health. Kelly Mannell of Jacksonville's Image Partners is an expert in the field of emotional intelligence, or EQ, and she's here with a preview. Kelly, good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And I'm excited about this. This is coming up October 5th and 6th. The conference is happening at the Epping Forest Yacht Club.
Yes, ma'am.
What is mindfulness?
Oh, my goodness. What a great question. So mindfulness means a lot of things to a lot of people, and the thing that people think of first when they think of mindfulness is like meditation or sort of being present.
Right.
Right. So the notion of mindfulness could talk about being mindful in your day, mindful in your living, mindful in your work, mindful in your family. And so what does all that mean? So for instance, mindfulness eating could mean that you're just present while you're eating and not on your phone or watching television or a ball game or...
So you're focusing your full attention on whatever it is you're doing at that moment
right.
in time.
That's right. So mindfulness has so much power for us physiologically and emotionally. And this is what the experts in emotional intelligence are finding out.
And they're going to be talking about how these concepts can make us all healthier. How will that work? How does that work?
So, well, the keynote speaker, and this is really cutting-edge research, Melissa, the Mayo Clinic is doing research in mindfulness and meditation. And what they're finding is that when people who have chronic illnesses or even any illnesses engage mindfulness and intent in their healing, they're able to focus all of their attention and their body and their mind towards their healing. And the early research shows that this is very helpful for people, and people literally will get better. They get better sometimes a lot faster. Mm-hmm. And so the research is so promising, and that's why, of course, the Mayo Clinic, which is a research institute, is taking notice.
And this is hard data that might convince some skeptics who are listening to this and saying, this sounds very new agey to me. I don't believe in any of that.
Well,
but real clinicians are serious about this.
Very serious. As a matter of fact, almost I think all the hospitals, if not all the hospitals, will be present at this. They've already signed people up. So it tells you that there's already enough information, evidence, and care about this subject that other professionals are interested in learning more about the cutting-edge research. What is it showing? What can they do in their practice? What can they do for their medical facilities?
Now, you're an expert in the field of emotional intelligence. Can you describe a little bit about that research and why that has become such an important field when we look at not just our health, but also our success in life?
Well, this is such a large body of research, which is so amazing. But essentially, emotional intelligence is the notion of being self-aware, self-regulated, and also being able to manage with other relationships. It is stated that the best research shows that over 70% of our success comes from more of our emotional intelligence development rather than our what we call our academic performance development. So I know that's a pretty brave statement and bold statement to make, but really that's what the research is showing.
It's true. If you're well-liked at work and you're self-aware and aware of the feelings of others, we're going to do a lot better than if you're just really, really only good at the tasks of your job.
Right. Now, I mean, we have to be good technically,
you
obviously.
Do.
And that's sort of a basic bar that we all have to meet. You know, engineers have to measure well and do things so that the bridge doesn't fall down, correct? But if you can't communicate in a meeting the importance of certain things, or if you can't emphasize things, or if your relationships are so poor, people may not want to work for you or with you or on your team, or they might not listen as carefully as you want them to. So all these things have a big presence in our work world.
So when people come out to this event, they're going to learn a little bit more about this. What all's on the agenda?
Well, they're going to learn so much more. And what's amazing is we have an incredible rundown of speakers, which it's a one-time event, so it's really a lifetime thing. I talked about Dr. Benzo, who is now a leading researcher at Mayo Clinic. We're flying him in from Minnesota, and he will be talking about empowered living and the notion of how he teaches mindfulness to his patients and also to the staff. I know that Mayo Clinic is now taking a turn for their staff teaching emotional intelligence and mindfulness so that their presence can be healthful for the patient as well, mm-hmm. not just their technical skill, but their presence and their interaction skills. So we've got so many. We also have two other really key experts that I really want to share with you, Melissa. They're going to be virtual experts that are calling in. A gentleman named Joshua Freeman, who is the founder of and change agent of 6 Seconds of EQ Network. He is an internationally renowned expert in mindfulness and emotional intelligence. It's going to be incredible to have him in the same conference as Dr. Benzo. We also have a Mr. Stephen Walker, who is calling in from London, and he was one of the founders of one of the most successful emotional intelligence instruments, which I use, by the way, as well. He's These guys, by the way, are also my coaches. They're very good to work with. They're really fabulous individuals. And, of course, just even interacting with them for the conference feels like you're getting coached all the time. It's amazing.
You don't need much coaching. You are the most emotionally intelligent person I know.
Oh, that's such a compliment.
No, you really are. And it's such an interesting field now. This is October 5th and 6th. How can people register?
Well, if they go online, the Society of Emotional Intelligence North Florida .org, and they can register. As a matter of fact, we're actually almost sold out.
Oh, wow.
We had to move the conference from the River Club, as you can imagine, over to Epping Forest.
Because of the storm.
And, of course, Epping has been so incredibly gracious to just reboot it with...
Because they have emotional intelligence.
They do. they thought this was a very important event. So we're really lucky because it's even a lot closer for people. We've got people, Elizabeth Bruno from Baptist Health coming, which is incredible. We've got John Chapelier, who I know a lot of people know in town. He actually wrote a song just for this particular event.
He's a great guy, author John Chapelier. So this is going to be an amazing opportunity. October 5th and 6th at Epping Forest Yacht Club. A conference on mindfulness. Kelly Mannell of Jacksonville Image Partners. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks for listening. 1A's up next with a look at why a protest about police brutality turned into a fight over the meaning of the American flag. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Right now, though, we want you to support this public radio station. Here's how.
Give us a call at 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528 or go online at wjct.org. Good morning. I'm Kevin Murchard, co-producer of First Coast Connect. Heard another great program. We heard news from a local reaction in what's going on in Puerto Rico and Steve Zoma from the FOP. Where else do you get this kind of information? It was just great stuff we can bring to you every single day. And that's made possible because of listeners like you showing your financial support. So how about becoming a sustainer? $10 a month on your credit card, and then you don't have to worry about that. We are looking for 4,500 new donors for this year, 2017. And, you know, we have less than 1,300 to go. So if you haven't done it, now is the time to do so. Make that call. Show your support for all the programs you enjoy here at WJCT. You know, we're going to have this drive a couple of weeks ago, but of course, Irma made that a little different. We had to postpone it because we were too busy giving you all the information we could. The whole new staff was here. We were doing what we could to find information for you. Even lots of people would call up and say, gee, thanks for just being here. Some people would call. They didn't want to go on the air. They just wanted to know something or just call to say thank you. Some of them called and says, hey, what about this or this or this? And we tried to find the information we could and brought it to you because that's why we're here. We're here to bring you the important news of the day. Now, every dollar really counts during a drive like this. So make that call right now. Show your support for the news and the music programs you enjoy every day here at WJCT. Call now and thank you so much. Once again, the number is 353-9528 or 1-800-722-9528, or you can go online to wjct.org. Remember, every dollar is important. It brings you the great information. It brings you the great music programs you hear. It brings you the entertainment programs on WJCT. All of it comes because of listeners like you. So make that call now, and thank you very much. Once again, the number is 353-9528 to show support for this, your public radio station.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.